Well, thank you very much. This reminds me that I spent 5.5 years doing a PhD, which took 680 pages, which I made into a book. And now when people say, what was your thesis about? I can describe it in one sentence. So what I'm going to try and do in about 15 minutes is give you a summary of seven months, very intensive work by the Emissions Trading Task Group, which I had the honour to chair. And I suppose let me start by giving the graph that everybody knew right at the beginning. And it indicates, of course, that Australia is on target to meet its Kyoto target, that is of 108% of 1990 levels between 2008 and 2012. But it also shows, of course, that by 2020, if we don't take further action, then our emissions are likely to continue to rise. Now, we spent a lot of time talking about the issues of emissions trading. I suppose I could summarise it. There were three things we came to know during this 6 months. The first, which is on the screen, that we, in all likelihood, will meet our Kyoto target. We'll meet it through some relatively low-cost measures, which are also, let me remind you, very good policy, such as reducing land clearing. But the problem with that is it tended to be one-off. The group was also of the view that there have been many other measures introduced which have helped us to meet this target, but a number of them, such as mandatory technology, renewable technology targets, provide abatement at, in fact, very high cost. And one thing we were determined is that what Australia needed to do, if you believe in the impact of climate change, if you want to protect yourself, if you want to manage the risk that faces future generations by bringing that risk forward onto our shoulders, that we need to do it at least cost. The second, and you will know this, is Australia can do a bugger all on its own. We're 1.5% of the world's emissions. By 2050, we'll be about 1% of the world's emissions. So unless what we do here can help to strengthen our effectiveness internationally and allow us to become part of a global arrangement, it's not going to mean very much. It may make us feel good, but it's not going to have any significant effect on mitigating the emission of greenhouse gases. So we need to be part of acting globally. And again, the task group were unanimous in the view that Kyoto was not a strong basis for moving forward into the future, not least, of course, because it really doesn't involve, in a coherent way, developing countries. But our view was we couldn't certainly just wait until there was a global scheme in place and then say Australia will join. And the reason we don't think we can do that is twofold. First, we don't anticipate there is going to be a post-Kyoto comprehensive global agreement in the near future. What you're going to see internationally is a patchwork of different emissions. Some will be called climate of different policies. Some will be called climate change. Others will be called energy security. Some will be called sustainable development. Some will be about emissions trading, and some will be about forest stewardship, and some will be about technology partnerships. There will be a mixture of bilateral and multilateral and plurilateral and regional arrangements. It's going to be a mess for a few years internationally. There isn't going to be, we don't believe, in 2012, sudden announcement, a comprehensive global agreement. There might be, it would be good, but it's unlikely. But the view is, therefore, we couldn't wait for a global agreement, and more than that, it was clear to us from all the consultations that we were doing with industry that there were increasing costs to uncertainty about what Australian government policy was going to be. And so that's why, as a group, we came to the view that we, you know, couldn't wait for the development of a global agreement. We needed, as a country, to set our own long-term aspirational goal to reduce emissions, find the least cost way to achieve that goal, and in our view, that was clearly to use the market. To use the market to drive a price for carbon, to drive technology change, to get us the least cost, not the no cost, but the least cost emissions reduction. And that, of course, to be accompanied by a very active international strategy. So how do we think it's going to work? Well, this is our views. First of all, the government needs to set a long-term aspirational target, and it is now committed to doing so by the middle of next year. This is a target for, let us say, 2050, 2060. It's got to be long enough to be the lifetime of an investment. In other words, it's got to be 30 or 40 years. That's the first thing, the aspirational goal. What the government then needs to do is to say, well, what are going to be the emissions for the first 10 years? And it's got to do that very specifically. We're suggesting a scheme that would come in 2011. So the Australian government will set the emissions target for 2011 will be this, 2012, 2013. So for the first 10 years, you know specifically what the targets are. Our view is that you should move only slowly away from business as usual. So in other words, you slow rise, then stabilisation, and then a downwards trajectory. And this, I suppose, is one of, I think, the most innovative features of the scheme we're proposing. The government should also set, if you like, a range of targets for the next 10 years. So, you know the aspirational target, let us say, for 2050. You know the emissions levels that are being set for the first 10 years, 20 to 11 to 2020. And then it sets a gateway, as you can see up there, for what might be 2025 and another gateway for 2030. So that business knows not exactly what the emissions is going to be, the target set by government for 2025, but it knows there will be a minima and a maxima. And then what we're saying is each 5 years, government can calibrate and move forward another 5 years. You see, what you're getting is not only an aspirational target, but a real sense of the trajectory. Now, the likelihood, not the certainty, but the likelihood is that over time, governments are probably going to go for the lower point of the gateway. That is to say, progressively tighten the amount of emissions that can be put into the atmosphere by Australia. It could go the other way. Maybe we'll find, for example, there is simply no international agreement and that Australia is punishing itself economically for nothing. Perhaps we'll discover all the science is dead wrong and we start to go into a period of global ice age. But the point is, the likelihood is that governments will progressively tighten the trajectory down to that aspirational goal. Now, what you, of course, do, once you've got a trajectory, that in effect drives a forward price curve for carbon. Now, let me say this, I think you'll all understand it, but some of my audiences don't. The government is setting the emissions targets. The market is setting the price. Because somehow, some people are thinking the government is going out there and saying what the price is going to be of carbon in 2011 and 2020 and 2050. It's the market that does that. You'll get a forward price curve. It will go up. In other words, if emissions are being reduced, the price of carbon is going to be going up. Now, one of the things we wanted to avoid, one of the reasons we're saying, for goodness sake, take 3 years to get this right. One of the things we want to make sure is you don't immediately have the sort of wild fluctuations we've seen with the European scheme. And remember, by the government now embracing this approach, it really has set us near the front of the rest of the world. And I'll come to how ambitious this is in a moment. But what we're saying is we need a bit of certainty during those first few years. One way is by only slowly moving away from business as usual, and the other is by use of the emissions fee. The emissions fee from, let us say, about 2013, 2014, is going to be a compliance requirement. In other words, if you emit more greenhouse gases than you've got permits for, you will pay a penalty, and that's the emissions fee. And obviously the emissions fee has got to be higher than the price of carbon, because otherwise people will say, well, we won't reduce our carbon emissions, we'll just agree to pay the fee. But what we're suggesting is in this first 2, maybe 3 years, we'll set the emissions fee only slightly above the carbon price. In effect, in those first few years, it in effect acts as a maximum price. In those first few years, it is almost a mix, a hybrid, if you will, between emissions trading and a carbon tax. So that's how we're suggesting. And we are saying, and I think this should have knocked people's socks off, but it didn't, but we are saying, go big. If you're going to have an emissions trading system, and we think we should have, and the Australian government has now accepted this, you need to cover as much of the economy as you can. Because if you don't, that part of the economy which is subject to emissions controls will pay a higher price relative to that part of the economy which is not covered. So we've gone wide. We have said if we're going to do this, we should start from the premise that essentially we cover 100% of emissions, except where we have very high administrative compliance costs. We are going for a system which we think will cover about 70 to 75% of Australian emissions from introduction in 2011. How does that compare? Well, compared with the state scheme was looking at 35 to 45% of emissions. European scheme, 45%. Our scheme's looking at 70, 75%. You know, this is ambitious. The reason we're saying let's move cautiously to set this up by 2011 isn't because I was the chair of a task group which was looking to procrastinate. It was because I was the chair of a task group which was trying to be bold in the scheme that we wanted to introduce. In terms of the large facilities, the good news is we think there's about 900 facilities in that produce about 25,000 tons of carbon a year. If we apply emissions trading to those 900 firms, that will cover about 80% of the emissions in that sector. Of course, small business will not need to go and get emissions permits, but will be subject to this because they'll be paying more for their fuel, they'll be paying more for their energy. In terms of fuel, this is the big difference. In our view, looking at Australia, and this is an emissions trading scheme which is designed for Australia. In our view, fuel should be in, and the way you deal with fuel is by imposing the constraints on the fuel distributors. Small businesses and households have no direct liability, but will suffer. The price is income. Initially, and I emphasise initially, we will be looking to not include agriculture or land use or waste. And it's simply because the data we've got on that at the moment is not sufficiently good. In our view, agriculture should be brought into the system. At the moment, we don't think it can be done by 2011. But of course, agriculture becomes very important in terms of the carbon offsets that may be offered in the scheme. How are these permits going to be allocated? Well, there's going to be 3 different ways. And again, let me go back. Government sets targets. Market sets carbon prices. An independent regulator does the allocation and oversight of permits. Essentially, we're saying, look at the Australian economy, look at firms, and we will pay a compensation, a once and for all, once off compensation for those firms that suffer a disproportionate loss. Now remember this, one of the things we tried to write is an eyes wide open report. Emissions trading, managing the risk of climate change costs. You will pay more for fuel, you will pay more for energy. It will impose costs on economic growth. It's the way we manage those costs to get them as low as possible. But some firms, all firms will suffer some sort of loss, probably. But we're looking here at compensating firms that suffer a disproportionate loss. What do I mean? Well, let us imagine that you're in a firm where your net income stream is going to be reduced by 20% as a result of emissions controls. You don't get compensation in the form of a package of permits for 20%. We're looking for disproportionate loss. So let us imagine that we do the calculations and we find that the aggregate cost to the Australian economy is 5%. The disproportionate loss for your firm is therefore 15%. And you will get a free allocation of permits in recognition of that disproportionate loss. So you will get a bucket of permits. Some will be for 2011, some for 2015, some for 2020, some for 2030. Who knows? And that's once and for all. Then there will also be a free allocation of permits to the trade-exposed emissions-intensive industries. Now, this is pretty important. There is absolutely no point in beating ourselves up or beating our trade-exposed emissions-intensive industries up, in driving production overseas in a way that doesn't actually help to reduce global emissions one bit. So whilst our trade-exposed emissions-intensives are not on a level playing field with the rest of the world, for this transition period, they too get a free allocation, but their free allocation continues as long as there is not a global arrangement in place for their industry sector. We still, of course, want to push those trade-exposed to have better, less carbon technology, and therefore what we're suggesting over time is if you want to get more permits to expand your plant, the number of permits you will be given will be based on world's best practice. And again, all of that is designed to push even these industries into having an economic reason why they want to improve their technology. And then the remaining permits over time will be auctioned through an independent regulator. Now this slide isn't in the emissions trading report, but it's a neat one. It's got lots of colour, and I'll give the movement. The blue here is these one-off compensation permits. You notice this is a very carefully drawn graph. This is the public service at its best. It's got no time frame. It's got no amount of emissions, and even the line of reduction you couldn't draw too much from. But what you've got is a reduction in emissions over time. The brown at the top is that part of the economy we're not including at the beginning, agriculture, land use. The blue is the number of permits that we're giving as compensation. We'd probably give more for 2011, and we'll give very few for 20. Okay? But essentially, you've got a package of permits. The yellow is what you give for the trade exposed, and as I've said, that allocation will continue for a long transitional period as long as our industries are competing not on a level international playing field. But they will reduce over time. Now, the bit that's probably interesting you, I imagine the bit that interests any government, is the red bit in the middle, because, of course, this is the amount of permits that will be available for revenue. And it is clear that whilst in the first year it will be small, it has the potential to rise quite quickly. And therefore, our task group was, so what should we do with that? Our view is we are only going through this exercise in order to try and reduce emissions and try and do so by the improved development and adaptation of technology. And our view, therefore, is that the revenues that come from this should contribute quite directly to that. So in our view, these are revenues which should go to help to research and develop and demonstrate low emissions technologies. We're talking about here helping industry at the pre-commercial stage to help to drive this technological change. Measures to address significant market failures. Assistance to households. This is the one thing on which I think we're pretty clear, that we not necessarily know what the government should do, but we're bloody certain what the government shouldn't do. And what the government shouldn't do is simply use the revenues to subsidise the power bills of individual households. Now, in case that sounds a bit mean, again, think what we're trying to do here. We are trying to change the behaviour of industry and households. If you simply go in and subsidise the energy bill of households, you won't get behavioural change. Those are the support for households should be, if government wants to do this, helping them, informing them, subsidising them perhaps to take measures which will reduce their use of energy and emissions-intensive energy. So that's what we think in terms of complementary measures. We don't stand up, I don't stand up in here and say, brothers and sisters, we have found the answer is emissions trading. We think it is absolutely the foundation because we believe in the market. And the best way to do it is through the market. But there is clearly a need for complementary measures, and I've set them out. What we don't believe, however, is having measures which don't just address market failures, but are in fact very expensive. And that's why, and this I suppose is part of the controversy in this report, we do not support continuation of mandatory renewable schemes. What have we got against renewables? Nothing. Nothing do we have against renewables. I reckon geothermal and solar may be part of the solution for the future. Just in the same way as clean coal and nuclear may be part of the solution for the future. What we're saying is the decider should be the market. We're only doing this for one reason. We're not doing this to promote wind power. We're doing it to reduce emissions at least cost. And if wind power is the answer, that's great. The market will see that. Time frame. We think 3.5 years, this is where we've been to go slow. I hope this little chart will just show you what has got to be done. We're saying that from the next year, year and a half, there's a huge amount of work that's got to be done in finalising the design of the scheme. Just about every question you're going to ask me, I'm going to say, I don't know, we're going to decide this in the next 18 months. We need to get an emissions reporting scheme up and running. We need to set the long-term aspirational goal, engage our international partners. Then in 2009, we've got to get the legislation through, establish the government structures, including the independent regulator, broaden international cooperation, rationalise government programmes. I don't know how much this independent regulator is going to be paid, but it's not going to be enough. This is going to be a very difficult few years. Perhaps I'm wrong. Perhaps I've been in the public service too long and become cynical. But I suspect that a lot of industries are going to think they're trade-exposed emissions intensives. And if they're not, they're going to think they suffer disproportionate loss. And it's going to be a quite hard, challenging few years to set those permit allocations through the independent regulator. We've got to rationalise government programs, and then in 2010, we'll have the short-term targets, the allocation of the permits, and commence trading at the beginning of 2011. And obviously, right through this, exploring linkages with other countries. So, we think, on the task group, that this is one of the most innovative examples of such a scheme in the world. Genuinely believe that. More comprehensive than emissions trading schemes introduced or proposed elsewhere. To commit ourselves would position us ahead of most of the world. And, of course, I wrote that graph on Friday, and on the Sunday, the government accepted the conclusions of the task group. What we wanted to do was think big, commit early, design carefully, act deliberately, and then implement cautiously. I hope that's been helpful.